How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 13 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Head to normantranscript.com to get all your Thunder coverage. You can find my blog there. That's Thunder Road under the sports tab on the site. New stories on the site today. A bunch of stuff from Commissioner Adam Silver addressing the media Tuesday night in Las Vegas, including his comments on Kevin Durant. And you can find more stories and more of my content there or by heading onto iTunes, searching Locked On Thunder and subscribing to the pod on iTunes. You can also find us on audioboom.com. But something I wanted to lead with today, another solo podcast that's a little Thunder unrelated, but it may be the most under the radar important NBA storyline right now. What's to do with the All-Star game in Charlotte next year? Silver said Tuesday the NBA isn't ready to make a decision yet on having the All-Star game in Charlotte. I was at that press conference. I'm in Las Vegas now for Summer League, and you can look up the backstory on this. In short, with the bathroom bill running through North Carolina legislature, the location of the 2017 NBA All-Star game has come under fire. Should the league actually play one of its main events in a state that supports a law it has already spoken out against? People have strong opinions on either side of this, and I just want to interject some nuance into the conversation. First, let me say right off the bat, I think that law's horse crap. I don't want there to be any doubt about that. It's discriminatory against the demographic that already lives far too difficult a life. It's inexcusable. But I don't envy the position the NBA is in, and I don't think just moving the All-Star game is that simple. No matter how staunchly you oppose the bathroom bill, it's not an easy decision. Of course, you're making a social statement if you move it to another city. You're hurting the state, and you're hurting the state. You're taking away some revenue it was certainly looking forward to. The NBA All-Star Game is a big event. Losing it would be a huge deal, especially from an awareness perspective, awareness of the issues that are going on in North Carolina right now. But remember, it's not that simple. The league would also be punishing the Hornets. That's a team that's come out and denounced everything behind that law. The Hornets have been on the right side of this all the way. It's not their fault. Is the collateral damage worth it? Maybe. Possibly. It's certainly legitimate to believe it is. And maybe I'm minimizing the issue by even implying that there's a possibility that it's not. But the NBA still has to vet other locations. There aren't that many locations the league could plan an All-Star weekend in 7 months. It's just 7 months until the game. I was surprised when the NBA and Silver came out today and said they hadn't made a decision yet. I was expecting some sort of announcement, either the league announcing that the game was going to be held in Charlotte or the league announcing that they were going to move it from Charlotte. I just figured 7 months wasn't necessarily enough time. I figured we would have had a decision by now, but 7 months seems like you're really pushing it up against the deadline. We're nearing a time when the league has to make a decision. It's not a lot of time. It's not a lot of time at all. The city needs the natural infrastructure to house an All-Star game if they were to move it. It needs the team to house it. And keep in mind, from a consistency basis, from an ethical one, from a PR one, from every angle, the NBA would need to make sure the new city, whichever one it was, had no similar legislation. And it doesn't just end there. It would need to make sure the owner of whichever team in whichever city that they wanted didn't have a history with donating to groups that may support or may not support all that's going down in Charlotte. They need to make sure there isn't a history of discriminatory behavior within that team. And because of those variables, because of the extra vetting process, if the league moves the All-Star game, if only from a PR perspective, it opens itself up to criticism elsewhere. And knowing all that, if you still think the league needs to move the game, that's great. I'm honestly probably with you on that standpoint, but considering the fact that Commissioner Silver and the owners and the rest of the group is doing its due diligence, we know that. We know that for a fact. We know this is something that the league is consistently talking about and the owners are talking about and really struggling over. It seems like one of those situations, and I don't want to seem like I'm doing PR for the league, but it does seem like organically one of those situations where we have to base our judgments on how the league arrives at its eventual decision, not necessarily what the actual decision is. And I just don't envy them in having to make such a tough call. Some quick Twitter questions. We're going quickly today because frankly, I'm in Las Vegas and it's as simple as that. From, I know I'm going to mispronounce this, @foreveryerg. Any trades you think Sam is looking, Sam Presti is looking into to keep us in contention? Of course, this is a Thunder podcast, so let's talk some Thunder. I mean, the Thunder could get as much as $20 million under the cap. I've talked about this on the podcast before. I've written about this constantly since Durant left. They could open up a ton of cap room. Now, they don't necessarily have cap room technically right now, or they don't have a lot of cap room or as much as they could, because they still have cap holds from Dion Waiters, Randy Foy, Nazir Muhammad on the books. Foy and Muhammad would be easy to clear. If they have interest in re-signing Waiters, obviously that's not quite as easy. If they still think there's a possibility of signing Russell Westbrook to an extension, which was reported by David Aldridge last week, that there was, quote, no chance that Westbrook would sign an extension. Granted, the financial outlook right now is a little bit different than it was a week ago because the 2017 cap is down. The projection for 2017 is down from where it was. That might give Westbrook a little more incentive to sign an extension from when it was before. I'm going to write something in this coming week on basically how the Thunder could pitch Westbrook on an extension from a financial and an emotional standpoint. So stay tuned for that. But the Thunder could use that cap space to extend Westbrook because he'd get a bump in his salary this year. They could use it to re-sign Dion Waiters, whose cap hold is over $12 million, actually closer to $13 million. I don't know what trades they would go for. Staying under the cap and absorbing a big contract is something that I think is a possibility, because there are other, even though there are other teams that are under the cap and they're just kind of waiting out the summer, just like the Thunder. I mean, the Nets are waiting out the summer. They have tens of millions of dollars in cap room. The 76ers still have loads of cap room. Some other teams still have cap room. And those teams are kind of waiting it out, trying to see if they can get the remaining free agents, which there aren't that many right now. I mean, there are only about four restricted free agents left. And then a few unrestricted guys of consequence. I'm not counting LeBron. And that's it. So you could try to absorb a bigger contract in a trade. I mean, look, there have been rumors about some guys on the Kings. I just don't know how Rudy Gay fits into this team. If I'm Sam Presti and I'm trying to get a three who's a starting caliber three, Rudy Gay is not the type of player that I'm looking for. Rudy Gay is a ball dominant wing. Rudy Gay likes playing inside the three-point line. The Thunder don't need another shooter who is inconsistent from three-point for his position. If they're going to bring in a three, I would hope that it would be someone who can actually shoot threes. I don't know who that's going to be. Maybe they make a smaller move. Maybe that's a Ben McLemore type of move, although they do have shooting guards. I think their number one need right now is wings. Maybe they make an offer sheet at Mo Harkless, who also, though, isn't really a shooter, but would obviously be a different kind of get than Rudy Gay, isn't someone who's going to command the ball as much playing next to Russell Westbrook and Victor Oladipo. I just don't know what the fit would be on Rudy Gay, even though his contract is not really a bad contract anymore, given today's financial environment in the league and all these crazy contracts that are going out. Here are two questions that are pretty similar. And I don't know if I did a good job addressing that first one. In that previous question, I'm jumping back because this is what's happening right now. I'm jumping back. Basically, I don't know what other trades they're going to go for, because I think this is the type of thing where if they are going to go for a trade, it's going to be something that's going to arise at the last second when a team is trying to unload somebody and the Thunder could basically absorb them into their cap. And that's not something we can know until it's later in the summer and more guys are off the market, even though almost everyone's off the market already, but more guys will be off the market. And that's when I think we'll see a market for trades and absorbing bigger contracts on. If the Thunder were going to do something like that, I think that's when we would probably learn about that stuff closer to August or into August or September. So here, two questions to move on to. They're pretty similar. I'll just address them at the same time. From at JordanMoore21, and the other one is from at BlackDolphin5. So the first one is, might the Thunder re-sign Waiters just to keep his asset, just to keep him as an asset, or trade him later? And the next one is Waiters going to sign the qualifying offer to become a free agent next summer? You know, the Thunder do have some interest in bringing back Waiters, obviously. They've got to have some interest in keeping back Waiters, and we know that because they haven't renounced his cap hold. If they had absolutely no interest, you have to imagine that they would have renounced his cap hold by now, because it's pretty big. It's close to $13 million, and I think it's $12.9 million, and that's eating up cap space. Waiters is lingering right now, but I talked about this on the podcast yesterday with Sean Hyken. I don't think that necessarily means he's going to lose out on the money that people expected him to get. We've seen free agents, restricted free agents, linger late into the summer before and still get big paydays. Tristan Thompson's situation was a little bit different because it was a holdout and it was a LeBron thing and it was a Rich Paul thing. And Rich Paul is Tristan Thompson's agent and he's notorious for pushing guys late into the summer. He did the same thing with Eric Bledsoe a couple of years ago. But those guys, Bledsoe, Thompson, still got major contracts. They still signed on for full value. Nikola Pekovic 3 years ago went all the way into August, still signed 5 years, $60 million deal, which now doesn't sound like anything. But at the time, 5 years for Nikola Pekovic, that was real value for someone like Pekovic. From Pekovic's standpoint, I mean. Enes Kanter went into mid-July around the same time. I believe he signed the offer sheet this exact day. This might be the 1 year anniversary of Kanter signing an offer sheet. So he went a little bit later. Granted, the moratorium went later, but he was negotiating for the same amount of time. And he got, you know, a contract that a lot of people criticized because they said it was too big. And, you know, obviously it doesn't look as big now after the contracts we've seen some of these big men get this summer. But that was a contract where people thought that Kanter got a value that was above the market. Greg Monroe is really the only guy who went in recent years. Ben Gordon did it as well with the Bulls. But Greg Monroe is really the only guy who took the qualifying offer. He went into August and then just said, screw it, I'm taking the qualifying offer. Part of the reason he did that was because he wanted out of Detroit, and he was worried about them matching on something. Detroit had a really jumbled front court. It was Monroe and Josh Smith and Andre Drummond, and someone was going to be an odd man out, and it didn't really fit. Monroe is a natural five. Drummond is a natural five. Josh Smith was a natural four. It was a weird fit. Monroe was obviously a little frustrated by his situation in Detroit and the way he was being handled. He took a qualifying offer, decided to become unrestricted the next year, and he got a big contract from the Bucks the following offseason. And now he plays the five in Milwaukee. But I don't know if that's the situation with Waiters. Maybe things have changed since Kevin Durant left. Maybe he doesn't want to come back as much because Durant is now, you know, Durant obviously made the Thunder title contenders, and now they're a step below without him. And Durant and Dion were super close on a personal level also. So maybe Dion wanting to come back to Oklahoma City, maybe that was quelled a little bit when Durant left. It's possible. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine on that one. I couldn't tell you. But at the same time, if you take Waiters at his word, he constantly said he loved being in Oklahoma City. He wanted to come back. And the organization expressed some amount of interest in bringing him back. Now, they got Victor Oladipo. But Deion Waiters is a 24-year-old wing who plays defense. And yeah, shot selection is a skill. And it's a skill that, even though he was so much better in the postseason, it's a skill that he still needs to work on. Shot selection is not something that everyone can just learn. Some guys can't. And maybe Waiters will never be insanely efficient, but he's still a 24-year-old wing who plays defense, can shoot a little bit from three, and can guard sometimes up to three positions, depending on the small forwards he's going at. But he can guard ones, twos, and threes. And it's hard to find a lot of guys in the league his age who fit that description, which is why I think, based on his timeline, based on the Thunder's timeline, there's got to be some amount of interest. Now, if someone comes in with a $15 million a year offer, I don't think the Thunder are going to match that. But if something comes in undervalued, if he gets, you know, 3 years, you know, if he gets Jeremy Lin money, if he gets 3 years, $36 million, 3 years, $33 million, I think the Thunder would be okay with matching that. And this is me speculating. This is me guessing. I don't know. I don't know what the Thunder are thinking. They're closed off on this kind of stuff. So this is me using knowledge of how the Thunder have operated in the past and speculating based on my knowledge of what I think they'll do with Waiters. But I don't think they're going to go insanely high for Waiters. I don't think they have a reason to go insanely high for Waiters. And I think there could be a little bit of nerves with teams around the league in giving someone like Waiters a lot of money. I think he was a really good citizen this year. But I think his reputation was a little stinky coming out of Cleveland. And I think teams are a little bit worried about giving him a lot of money. I know that's a case in a few places. Not necessarily guys, teams who would be going out and giving him offers anyway, but that's something that's been discussed. And whether it's right or wrong, that could be something that's affecting his market. If he thinks he's a $15 million a year player, if he thinks he's more than that after looking at, say, Alan Crabb's deal, and other teams think he's a $10 million a year player, that's why you see him stay on the market so long. But I do think he's still going to get paid. I don't think he's going to take the qualifying offer. I don't think he's dying to get out of Oklahoma City. And I don't think it would be smart for him to take the risk on that one-year deal. Greg Monroe, pretty consistent player from year to year. Same numbers pretty much every year. As long as he didn't get hurt, he was going to be able to have to pick where he was going to go that following year pretty easily. Ben Gordon took a qualifying offer. Pretty consistent player. Deion Waiters, inconsistent on a night-to-night basis. Could be inconsistent on a year-to-year basis. We don't really have a large enough sample size to see what's going to happen with him on that sense. But he's not consistent enough to where I think taking the qualifying offer is worth the risk. He could come out, have a bad year next year, and cost himself money. If I were his agent, I wouldn't advise taking the qualifying offer. That's assuming that he has offers on the table for a legitimate length. Before we head out, just remember you can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. If you have questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow for more Thunder talk, more NBA talk, more everything else. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.